Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Michael Phillips covers the Washington Commanders for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael P. RTD. He is one of my favorite people to converse with about the football team and other things, by the way. You're a big college basketball guy, too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a Jayhawk, and we're right after you guys today.
Yeah. And down there, I mean, how much of UVA do you have to cover?
It's VCU is Richmond's big thing. And, you know, they right. had a great A-10 tournament run, and I covered UVA before I covered the Commanders, so I know Tony Bennett and have great admiration for Tony Bennett, as everybody does, for the man, not the style of basketball. The style of basketball is borderline unwatchable, but as a guy, he's great, and what he's done there, and, you know, I think that'll be, you know, that's a trendy upset pick there. A lot of people going with Furman, so we'll see. That's a big old clash of styles.
Yeah, Furman can really score, but Virginia, I think, will somehow impose that insufferable, unwatchable style and come out with like a 58-48 win. You know what's funny about that? You know, we'll get to Washington football talk here in a moment, is that I always felt for many years that UVA, you know, after the Terry Holland era, after the Jeff Jones era, which was actually a very successful yep. era as well. I had Jeff on my podcast yesterday. He's such a good guy. The UVA was kind of a big sleeping giant in the ACC for many years. I mean, they really underachieved for a long time, and they couldn't find the right answer. And Tony Bennett not only has won, he's won bigger than any coach in the history of the school, not just the national. If you take the national championship away, and still, they've never, for as long of a period as they've had now, a solid 10-year run of being, you know, one of the two or three best ACC teams and a top 10 performer nationally. But, yeah, the style isn't for everybody.
The style's not for everybody, and he's not out there. You need to think about the heyday of the ACC, just the big personalities that, you know, were unavoidable as coaches and players, and he doesn't really have any of those. Yeah, he's quietly put together a 10-year run you'd put against any of them.
Yeah, I mean, his personality, you know, I've always said about Tiger, his personality is his game. You know, Tony Bennett's personality is his coaching style, you know, which isn't a lot of personality, but it's what defines him, that and winning a hell of a lot. All right, let's get to football, because you tweeted something out that I read, and I just laughed out loud, and I think we're on the same page on this. But Michael tweeted out, people are mad because Brissett might be the week one starter? Question mark. That's some classic Twitter. I'll miss this place when it's gone. So just tell me, because, you know, tone is everything, and sometimes, you know, the number of characters aren't enough. I think it's self-explanatory, but give me your reaction to Brissett, and then the reaction to the Brissett signing from many in the fan base.
I was totally fine with the Brissett signing. I felt like it was a quite nice little signing, because you needed a backup, and you needed a guy who, I mean, let's go big picture for a second. This is a year that will be defined by whether or not they make the playoffs. I mean, it's hard to imagine a scenario for year four under Ron where they don't make the playoffs, and at the end of the year the commentary is, yeah, he's got this thing pointed in the right direction. He should keep rolling. So, you know, it's playoffs or nothing. And so I I guess the fan base has just decided Sam Howell is the savior and he's the second coming of whoever. And I mean, it's what we do. It's what we do. It's mid-March. There's somehow notion of being offended, like they picked a guy who might somehow compete with Sam Howell or catch Ron Rivera's eye in OTAs or training camp. I don't know, man. Ron's got a football team to run. He's got to make the playoffs. You can't just pick somebody who will sit there. You need somebody who, if Sam Howell goes down, will be able to play competent professional football and keep the train rolling for that time. No objections to the signing here.
Yeah, I mean, you said this season will be defined by whether or not they make the playoffs. I think some in the fan base believe that this season will be defined by whether or not Sam Howell becomes a legitimate starter, and therefore the idea here is that this is, you know, I read a tweet to start the show, and I'm looking for it here again. Kevin, the 2023 season is the season of Sam Howell. They drafted him. They anointed him QB1. They didn't, you know, as you like to say, swing big on that position. Brissett should be nothing more than a mentor for 17 games in the season of Sam. I mean, I just don't think, first of all, it's such a naive take. You know, nobody sets aside a full season for a fifth round a draft choice. I'm sorry. It just doesn't happen. Secondly, to your point, all of these seasons are, you know, they're their own entity. You know, Washington's not going to compete for a Super Bowl because even with Jacoby Brissett, they don't have a high-end starting quarterback. But they've got a pretty good roster, and if Sam can't do it, and by the way, there's a chance he can't do it, they, I think, signed a guy that actually will be their best professional starting option that they've had in several years.
What's the thing with the two overlapping circles? The Venn diagram.
I would like to see
the Venn diagram of people on Twitter yesterday who yelled, you have to commit to Sam Howell for 17 games as the starter, and people who in week three will demand he be benched
of
when he
course.
Throws one interception against the Chiefs.
And by the way, see, fifth rounders are cut bait material. First rounders get allowed, you know, a season, you know, or at least a significant portion of a season in their second or third year, you know, by the time you get down there. But when you don't invest a lot, you can easily cut bait. And I went through this last night, Michael, and for those that weren't listening earlier, there have been 129 quarterbacks taken in the fifth round or later this century since 2000. Exactly one quarterback's turned out to be great or be even an upper-tier starter, and that's Tom Brady. The next best is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that's it. That's the list, unless you want to bring in Nathan Peterman's name to the conversation. The odds are, you know, they didn't find their future starting quarterback. The overwhelming odds are they didn't find their future starting quarterback in Sam Howell. It doesn't mean that you can't hope for it, you can't wish for it, and you can't, you know, doesn't mean that you don't see something intriguing in Sam Howell, because he's got some talent. He does. But I think they made a good move yesterday. Dalton would have been my number one, but Brissett was my number two. How did you have the order of other quarterbacks?
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't have minded Bridgewater. I think the important thing is when you're having that discussion, you're not having a discussion about who's going to lead you to the Super Bowl. You're having a discussion about who you want your most reasonable backup to be. And so for that said, I couldn't get worked up over which one of them they picked. There were a lot of guys out there that were totally available and totally reasonable. And you know, I think it's the right thing to give Sam Howell a chance to see what he's got. But I also, as we get closer to draft day, I'm going to say this. I think they should draft a quarterback.
No doubt.
Same with the first rounder, but if you don't have a quarterback, you need to be drafting a quarterback every year until you have a quarterback. So I hope they bring in a third guy.
Oh, I wouldn't mind if they took a quarterback, or even if they really love somebody, trade it up to get a quarterback. They
sure.
don't have one right now. They don't have one that we know of. Right now. We're talking to Michael Phillips from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Two more on Brissett, but one I'm going to save for the very end. $8 million guaranteed. Actually, that's a little bit more than I thought that they would have to spend on the position. Whatever. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the difference of maybe $2-3 million. But are you surprised he got $8 million guaranteed?
I think they're paying what I've often dubbed the bad franchise tax, which is honestly, it costs more to get guys here. You know, you have to work them a little harder. You have to pay them a little more. How many times have we seen that over the years? You know, guys don't want to play here. The word's out on that. And you know, there's a lot you can point to. New ownership, Eric Bieniemy, Ron Rivera. You know, there's a lot of positives. There's guys in the building people want to play with. As a quarterback, you'd want to play with a receiver like Terry, and Jahan's obviously a very attractive weapon as well. Curtis Samuel seems to be a very good guy. So there's a lot going for the team, don't hear me wrong. But historically, this is a team that has had to pay extra to get guys, had to give Ron Rivera a bigger contract and more power than another team might have to attract him as head coach. And that's the bad franchise tax. When you're bad, you don't just pay for being bad. You have to pay extra to be bad.
All right, I'll come back. I've got one more to ask you about Jacoby Brissett and the quarterback situation at the end, but let's go to some of the other things this week. And I want to start with this because I don't know what the answer is, and maybe you do. Why is John Matsko gone?
Well,
offensive line coach, for those that aren't following.
Sure. So your two concurrent storylines there were difference of philosophy and he was fired. I'm not particularly interested in splitting the hairs. I mean, obviously he was asked to move on because – There's a new offensive coordinator in town. There's a new boss in town. Eric Bieniemy has been given very wide latitude and authority. He wants the position taught differently than John Matsko teaches it. I would assume Matsko was given the opportunity to retire. You know, it's something he's kicked around in the past and opted not to do that. I guess that's an indication to me. He thinks he may not be done with his coaching days. I haven't talked to him. He's very famously not given an interview in like 30 years. So, I don't think today will be the day, Eric Bieniemy has been given very broad latitude over how he runs the offense. The timing's the one thing you'd object to. Obviously, it comes a little too late in the game, but you'd say Eric Bieniemy came late in the game too. He didn't really get, you know, his first week was the combine, and he was off to work there. He hasn't really had a chance to get in and work with these guys until post combine, and so I think he came in and saw, hey, we're going to do things differently here. I'm going to need somebody else to do that.
Where are we on the overall coaching staff? How many positions still need to be filled?
Am I missing something? I think it's just that one. Are there any?
No, I think you're right, because they brought in the guy from Stanford to be the QB coach and move Zampezi.
Yeah. And we got a defensive backs locked down.
Right.
Okay. I mean, obviously, if the enemy wants to bring in somebody else, they'll find a position or make room. There's probably a lot of speculation around Juan Castillo moving over and grabbing a tight ends coach, which I think could potentially solve two problems. I think there was regression at the tight end position last year. I don't know how much of that was Logan Thomas's injury, but, you know, and there were injuries to the two young guys, too. But I think that's something they'll obviously take a good long look at.
All right, talking to Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. Busy week for the league, obviously. Busy week for this team, addressing some need areas. But it started with the, you know, announcement that they were extending Daron Payne. Let me get your reaction to that.
I thought it was a fair deal, and we still haven't seen that market really go wild yet, as we thought it might. You know, that may still be coming, but it's, with the Terry McLaurin deal last year, you know, the thing I kept saying all offseason was every day you wait, the price goes up. That is how the NFL works. And so set aside whether they should or shouldn't have made the deal. If you decide you're going to make the deal, which I think Ron was pretty set on, the sooner you do it, the better it is. Now, two interesting things for me here. One is that they did it under current ownership. I really thought they would wait until after the ownership change and the new guy would lock that down. So that was a bit of a surprise to me. And then number two is, look, if you're looking at this holistically, the correct move now, I think, from a franchise standpoint, is to trade either Montez Sweat or Chase Young. I don't think they will, Kevin, but I think that on paper, that's probably the right move now that you've locked him down.
Here's what I talked myself into with Lavero the other day, because I started down the path of thinking that if they didn't pick up Chase Young's fifth-year option, it would really be telling. But actually, if they're really not sure about Chase Young, and by the way, I think that that's probably an accurate and a fair statement at this point.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that they are concerned about, and yet they probably still see the chance that he could develop into what we saw his rookie year and what we saw in college. But if they're not sure, then really what they probably should do is not pick up that fifth-year option. And then if he blows up and has a big-time year, they can always use the franchise tag. It's not the, you know, it's not the best way to proceed, but, you know, it worked out in terms of a long-term deal with Daron Payne. But getting locked into that fifth year, if in fact, you know, either he's not healthy enough, and he's never going to be healthy enough, or if some of the other issues with sort of being coachable and playing within the scheme that they like, you know, isn't going to be a fit. You know, they're basically, by the way, they're probably either picking it up or not picking it up for the next regime anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
But I actually think from a team standpoint, it might make sense not to pick it up now, and I didn't think that 2 weeks ago. What do you think?
Well, and price-wise, the tag is going to be about $6 million more, I think, when the dust settles than what the fifth-year option would have been. And I understand that that's $6 million, but that's not a massive swing in the big scheme of things. To me, it's just such a no-win situation because you had the number two pick in the entire draft. That's where franchises are made. That's where game-changing players are taken. And everything you just said is right, but everything you just said is very discouraging because he was the number two overall pick in the entire draft. And when you get to this point, and that's the discussion you're having, you didn't win. You lost. And those come around so rarely that to lose on that pick really sets you back in a very tangible way. And that's not to say I also agree with you. I believe he could become a game-wrecking force in the NFL. He could become a very good NFL player. But at this point, it's very clear that he's not going to become, at least here, the number two overall pick and everything that means. And that sets you back way more than missing on Jamin Davis at, you know, in the teens. Like that, you know, that's a pick where you really need to set the cornerstone of your franchise, you know, for the, you know, at least a decade.
Michael, is the fifth year option, which would be the 2025 season, $6 million less than the franchise tag projected for 2025 for the position?
Yeah, so my understanding is the tag was what, 18? Or I'm sorry, the fifth year was 18, is that right?
I don't know. I forget.
And the tag projection right now is 24, which that's not set until everybody's free agent contract.
Okay. Well, that's a compelling reason to pick it up then.
It is, but it's guaranteed too, and you know, you may not want this. Is you remember when RG3s was picked up and Bruce Allen declared it a no-brainer, and we all had a giggle. But at the time, it was not guaranteed, and they just pulled it back the next year. This is guaranteed, and I think it's far more of a psychological game than it is a salary cap exercise because it's a definite message being sent by Ron to Chase. And you know, let's tease this all the way out. Chase was a Dan Snyder guy. That's not to say Dan picked him. You know, Ron was on board with the selection. But there were ties to the Snyder family. He was the kind of player Dan loves, you know, dynamic superstar, you know, in commercials, all of those things. And we're about to enter whatever the post-Dan Snyder era looks like. And I think Ron is going to regain a lot of control in the building. And, you know, I think he'll be putting his foot down on stuff like that.
Some of my favorite lines from him during that time were, you know, we're into drafting local players. Well, why? That does, nobody cares where they're from. Anyway, so with respect to Gates, Wiley, Barton, and everything else they've done this week, how would you grade it out?
Well, they're less desperate. They're not solved. This hasn't solved the offensive line by any stretch. There are still question marks. But they were in a position before this week, we're entering the draft, I would say they more or less had to take an offensive lineman in the first round. That's how dire the situation was up there, that they're basically locked into it. And again, I don't think they solved the problem by any stretch. But now if you squint as you look at the depth chart, you can talk yourself into it. And that allows you, if the board's not falling your way on draft night, if there's a corner that you love, if there's somebody else you want to go get, you're not desperate. You know, you're not saying we have to get out of tonight with an offensive lineman or this season is going to go down the tubes. You know, you've at least got viable options that you can play. But it's hard for me to tell you with a straight face, yeah, the problem's solved. I don't think it is.
Yeah, and by the way, they re-signed, for those that didn't pick this up, they re-signed Obada and Larson yesterday. Tyler Larson, the one backup, more so than Nick Martin, that could actually play a little bit. What do we know about Chase Roullier's possibilities for next year?
Yeah, and that's very much up in the air, and I think that's why you hear some noise around Gates playing center potentially. That they're going to need another option on that. This would be another year where he enters training camp, not certain to be able to practice or get ready or play. Last year ended up being a really rough year for him, obviously, as he rushed back. And you know, in retrospect, that contract was still the correct thing to do. He was a rising young talent, and you did want to lock him up, but it just hasn't worked out that way. Obviously, the injuries have really derailed him, and he's as frustrated by that as anybody. You can't go into the season depending on anything there. You've got to have a backup plan available. You've got to have, whether it's, a string it together approach with Larson's and Gates or go find somebody out there, draft somebody. The dependability is certainly not there as we enter training camp, for sure.
Cole Holcomb to Pittsburgh, too, if you missed out on that.
Yeah.
I liked Cole Holcomb as a player. They signed Cody Barton. Obviously, he got a level of money that the team wasn't willing to look at. But really, they don't play a lot of linebackers to begin with. So it's probably Davis Barton with some occasional Mayo and Hudson mixed in next year.
I think we all have the same reaction to the Cole Holcomb deal. Good for that guy. If you can turn those performances into that kind of money, nobody's mad here. I think it was probably the right thing for this team not to commit at that level. And it was definitely a cool thing for him to go get paid like that. And I can't imagine there's any animosity there in that departure. You play well, you get paid. And I don't think there's a world where you say this team should have gone that high for a position used that infrequently, for sure.
All right. Two more from Michael Phillips from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. What's next? What do you think's coming next? It seems like they really addressed a lot of stuff. We were wrapping it up yesterday with Brissett, but what comes next?
Well, I'm curious if there's another big signing left, and we watched the market settle down. That first day of legal tampering there, that Monday, guys either get paid or they get ticked. They get angry that the market doesn't materialize, and sometimes it takes guys a couple weeks to come to terms with that and to decide, okay, this is my market, this is what I'll play for. You're going to have names like Darius Slay that we're talking about. If they sign
looks
one of those
guys. Looks like he's back in Philadelphia, according to late-night Adam Schefter news.
Oh, there you go, late-night Schefty. I don't know, ever since I told him to lose my number, it's been crickets between us.
Yeah.
if there's a big signing out there, do you have to make a corresponding move? Is there going to be one more major cut, as there was with Matt Ioannidis? You remember that was a contentious one. So if not, you're rolling towards the draft, and I think the draft dictates everything else. Do you get a corner or an offensive lineman in the first round? Do you trade that pick? Do you trade up? As you mentioned, if there's a quarterback you really like and he slides into that 8 to 10, call it the Pat Mahomes range, where you just say, hey, we love this guy so much, we're going to go get him. I think it's a very intriguing board, and I think Eric Bieniemy being there makes it even more intriguing, just because we're all waiting to see who he'll get, what he'll do, what that philosophy will be.
All right, last one, back to Brissett. Two-part question. Who starts the opener on September, whatever that is, 2023? And then how many games do you think Brissett will start in 2023?
Well, You've never gone broke in D.C. taking the over on number of games played by the backup.
That is true.
That's been the same.
But I don't know what the under-over would be on this.
For a long time running. Your answer to number one is Sam Howell will start the opener. And I think Ron has a better read of the fan base than he did when he got here. And I think he understands.
But I hope that's not why he does it.
I think it's a factor. I also think Sam Howell will perform well enough in the preseason to justify his number one. I think if Brissett wildly outplays Howell in training camp, Ron will not hesitate to make the move. I don't think that will happen. I think Howell will come ready to go. And preseason is a very quarterback-friendly venue. As we saw, he dominated his preseason outing last year. So I think, as long as he avoids missteps, he'll be on the fast track to starting the opener. if you were to give me an over under as high as 4.5, I'd probably still hit the over. It's easy money in DC these days. I mean, things just happen around here. You know, you're being negative, Phillips. I don't know. I've just been watching for a long time. Like, I hope Hal's the kid. I hope it works out. But every single year, the backup plays way more games than you think he's going to play.
Thank you for doing this. As always, hope you're well. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Enjoy the basketball.
Good luck on your Jayhawks.
Same to the Terps.
Yeah. All right. Michael Phillips, everybody. All right. Let's open up phone lines. We'll do some Jacoby Brissett talk here. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. I don't really know what the right over-under is. Michael makes a point. I mean, it's just, you know, just the injury possibilities, especially here. The over-under on Jacoby Brissett starts next year is 4.5, kind of right. I would probably set it, honestly, right now at maybe a game lower than that, like 3.5. But I think, you know, we'll know a lot more during training camp, in what we start to hear about Sam Howell, cause that's going to be the bottom line. You know, what are we hearing and what are they saying and reading between the lines? You know, the preseason games aren't going to tell you anything. You know, it's more about what he's doing in practice. And by the way, how he's getting the plays, how he's calling the plays, how he's handling protections, you know, is he giving them a chance to be a competitive team offensively? I don't know what the right over-under number is. I think the best way to do this is just to say, A, what do you think of the Brissett signing? B, how many games does he start? 301-230-0980. We'll give you our answers when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Jimmy Patsos at 8. Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland will talk Jacoby Brissett with us towards the end of the show. We still have brackets to do. I've got a smell test for the first round of the tournament. But your calls right now at 301-230-0980. What did you make of the Brissett deal? How many games does he start? Denton, quickly, you liked the deal. You liked signing Brissett. He was at the top of your list. No, Minshew was, right? Minshew was your number one.
Minshew was the number one, but I do like the Brissett signing.
How many games does he start?
I think he'll start 3 games.
I like the Brissett signing. I'm not delusional. Like, this is going to be, you know, a Geno Smith kind of a year. Like, I've always liked Brissett, by the way, just as an FYI, going back to NC State. He's always looked the part to me. I thought he played some really good games this year, had a couple of really big time fourth quarters and some comeback wins over Carolina and Tampa Bay. I think this is a pretty damn good supporting cast for him compared to where he's been and the opportunities he's had. I like the signing. I really like it from the perspective of apparently everything you read about him, first-rate individual, big-time mentor, super intelligent. I like all of that as it relates to Sam Howell, you know, and giving Sam Howell the best opportunity. But playing the odds here, I think Jacoby Brissett will start 9 games in 2023 for this team. The odds being, more likely than not, Sam Howell isn't the long-term answer. I hope I'm wrong. And by the way, there's a lot about him that I like and I'm intrigued to see, and I hope he shows well in training camp and gets the opportunity. That would be the best thing for the franchise. Because if Brissett clearly beats him out, like it's not even close, that's a little bit telling, you know, even in year 2. But I hope it works out for Hal. But I think ultimately, Jacoby Brissett starts 9 games for the team in 2023. Jamal, kick it off for us. What did you make of the Brissett deal? Did you like it? And then how many games does he start in 2023?
A lot of what I think is similar to your assessment, but for different reasons. I do think that Brissett starts probably 8 to 10 games because I don't think Howell's ready. I think everything you said about being a first round, fifth round draft pick is completely correct, and I don't think that he'll be ready. I'm not thrilled about the Brissett deal for different reasons, though. I really, really like the kid Richardson from Florida, and I think that getting Jacoby Brissett probably means that they're not going to reach for a quarterback. I also don't think that there's a high likelihood that Richardson falls far enough for us to trade up for him, unless Levis goes before him, which I'm not 100% sure on whether or not that'll happen. But with Howell being a fifth-round pick, I don't think that they may have a little more patience because it'll be his first full year. But you're talking about one game against a Dallas Cowboys team that didn't really have a whole lot on the line at the time. I'm not sold on him yet. I'd like to be wrong, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm not making any determination one way or the other based on the Dallas game. By the way, I don't think, and I agree with you, with respect to Richardson, I think he is the most fascinating quarterback. He's not my number one quarterback. Bryce Young would be the number one, and I think I'd have Stroud too. But Richardson's ceiling is just, you know, through the roof. It should not prevent this team, if they love a quarterback, from being aggressive and trying to draft a quarterback at 16 or higher. And then if there's a quarterback down the road, and we talked about DTR yesterday, Dorian Thompson-Robinson from UCLA, they should be looking to take a quarterback on day two or day three if there's somebody there that they like. Thanks for the call. Chad, what did you think of the Brissett deal, and how many games does he start in 2023?
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Chad.
I agree with you about 9 to 10 games. I'm 29 years old. I'm going to be 30 in June. All I've ever known is mediocrity at quarterback with this team. All right. That's all I've ever known. And this year coming, it seems like, and I've said it to you before, it's like this type of limbo that I don't think I've felt before because of the ownership. Thank God he's finally going to be out. We hope so. But because of the roster. The roster to me is definitely top half of the league. I think you could say maybe even close to 10, you know.
And I don't know about 10, but it's top half of the league. It's certainly a top 10 defense.
Yeah, certainly that, yes. And you have weapons. You're a few pieces on the O-line. I think Jacoby could come in. And first off, it's a better option than Wentz was. I would take Jacoby.
It's a better option than Wentz or Heinicke.
Or Heinicke, exactly. And I think if he can be – I think he'll beat out Sam Howell. I think he can make every throw. I also think he's also athletic, and I think Bieniemy likes that as well. But you can't waste these weapons too much longer. Ron has to stop waiting. I was just texting my friend. I said, I swear to God, if a quarterback drops to 16 or even close to there and you don't get him, I don't know what Ron is. I don't know what he's thinking, because this is his last – technically, it's his last year, Kevin.
Yeah.
I mean, if he – maybe.
Yeah,
but
there's
if he doesn't go to the playoffs this year – I mean, with the defense and with the weapons, I don't know. He's got to be gone, right? I mean,
This is a lame duck season, you would think, unless he wins big, and that's where this interesting thing comes in with Sam Howell. I think it's very possible they're selling Sam Howell here in the offseason because it's all they have to sell, because he's an unknown, and because he's got some name recognition. And, you know, the anointing of him as QB1, even though he's sort of backtracked on that and says he wants competition and he wants him to earn it, but it's kind of his job to lose, is a way to sort of, you know, get people thinking, okay, well, maybe Howell's finally going to be the answer. But the truth is, more likely than not, he isn't. Like, a lot more likely than not. And so they went out and look, they spent $8 million on Jacoby Brissett yesterday. That's in terms of average annual of the quarterbacks that have been signed, other than the top tier guys, that's number one on the list. So he knew before this offseason, he's got to have somebody that can start in the NFL and not embarrass him in the event that that's what Howell becomes. Because they don't know on Howell. We don't know on Howell. Hopeful, wishful, but not sure. And I think it was a responsible thing. And with respect to what you're saying about him needing to win, I think that's what, you know, yesterday was. It was like it gives him his best chance, if Hal's not the guy, to win 8-9 games and be in the hunt late in the season, as he was last year with bad quarterbacking play for the most part. Subpar. Some of it was exciting. I hate to, you know, totally do that to the boy, Taylor Heinicke, the little guy. I hate doing that because he was exciting and he had some clutch moments for sure. But the quarterbacking overall was subpar last year. Chris, finish it up for us. What did you think of the Brissett deal, and how many games does he start next year?
I think it was a great signing because you got a veteran that's great in the locker room. That's what it matters. Someone you can learn from that been in a lot of good organizations. Well, been in a good organization that you can learn from. I think he will start maybe 2-under. This is my reason why. I think because your OC is going, he's out there to prove that he's worthy of being the head coach. So I think this offseason is going to be, they're going to come out sharp as a knife because him and the quarterback both, they're going to be on a heck of a page.
You said 2, though, for Brissett, right?
Yeah, 2-under.
You think the emphasis for Bieniemy will be to you know, come hell or high water, develop Sam Howell?
Absolutely, and this is going to prove that he's worthy of being a head coach. And this is going to, I think that because his ego. I think you got a great defensive coordinator that's not no nonsense. You got a great offensive coordinator that's no nonsense. I think this is going to be probably the best year they had in a long time. Also, you made a comment earlier about quarterbacks drafted in the 5th round. And beyond the success rate.
Yeah.
What about the 2nd and 4th round? You got a lot of quarterbacks.
It's still a very, very low success rate. I mean, you're talking about Cousins and Prescott, basically, in the last 10 years, anyway.
Also, you got Jalen Hurts. It keeps going on. I mean, you got Derek Carr, Wilson. You know, it's a lot of quarterbacks. Basically, what I was saying is, what about taking
the quarterback? It's not a lot of quarterbacks. It's not a lot. I've gone through that exercise before. It's not a lot of quarterbacks. Most of your franchise quarterbacks come in the top half of the first round, but definitely in the first round. You just got through the list.
Yeah, Washington also has success in the past with quarterbacks not drafted in first round. Not saying that they drafted them, but you got Theismann that wasn't the first round.
Yeah,
you got
we're talking about a different era of football, though.
Yeah, I get it, but I think that you
also
can take
a different coach.
I think it's a lot of talent out there.
Can I go back to something you started with, though? Let me just say something because you brought up a thought for me. Because I hear what you're saying with respect to Bieniemy. It's a big year for Bieniemy, too. You know, big year for Ron, but a bigger year for Bieniemy. Because Ron will probably not coach again if it doesn't work out here through the, you know, fifth year of his deal, which would be obviously in 2024. But, you know, developing Jacoby Brissett into a high-level or a higher-level performer this year would also be good for Eric Bieniemy. Because Jacoby Brissett has not set the league on fire, obviously, at any point. But if Bieniemy took Jacoby Brissett's game to another level, you know, and decided that Hal just didn't really have it, and, you know, decided Brissett could be taken to a different level, that would help him out a lot.
And Kevin, you also agreed that this is the most talent Jacoby Brissett ever had on
this
team.
I think so. I'm thinking of the Indy teams. You know, this one, I think more so. The New England team where he started those games, remember when Brady was suspended, right?
Correct.
You know, Cleveland, I mean, you had a great running game last year in Cleveland. You had Amari Cooper. But I actually think that Washington, perhaps overall, the overall team is probably the best he's had. I'd have to go do more. It doesn't strike me that he's played on a great team at this point in his career when he's had a chance to start games.
So we both agreed that Jacoby Brissett been in a toxic situation before, so you know how to handle that.
Cleveland's not the best of situations, that's for sure. I got to run. Thanks for the call. Good call. Right. Appreciate it, Chris. When we come back, we are going to scurry through quickly our brackets that will lead us to a Final Four, and then we'll save our Final Four and National Championship picks for next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. Arizona State won last night in the first four. They crushed Nevada 98-74. Nevada was one of those questionable teams, Denton, coming in. in terms of bubble teams. I thought Rutgers and or Clemson, probably Oklahoma State as well, all should have made it in front of Nevada. They came in on a three-game losing streak, including three losses in the Mountain West to teams holding a sub-90 net ranking. That was a bad choice by the committee. They were a non-competitive team against Arizona State last night. All right, we're going to do brackets here. And the way we're going to do this here in this segment is we're going to go through our first round upsets seeding-wise, not point spread-wise, seeding-wise. Then we will do the same thing in the second round, and we'll get you to a Sweet 16, Denton Sweet 16, my Sweet 16, and we'll finish it off next hour. All right, Denton, let's start in the South region where Maryland is. Give me your first round seeding upsets.
All right, so I got two of those. I have Furman over UVA, which everybody is doing, but I couldn't stop myself. So I have Furman over UVA, and I have Utah State over Missouri.
Okay, I have I considered Furman, but everybody likes Furman, so I'm picking Virginia. I've got NC State as the only lower seeded team. That means I've got Maryland winning over West Virginia. In that one. First round in the East. Well, let's move. Let's take it through the Sweet 16. Let's stick with the first round. Good God. It's not like I haven't done this before. In the East, give me your upsets seed-wise.
Only one. I have Louisiana beating Tennessee. Actually, I have FAU beating Memphis, too, so that's technically two. But
I've got the FAU over Memphis. That's all I got. In the West, what do you got upset seeding-wise?
In the West, I have Boise State over Northwestern. That's it.
I've got two. I've got Illinois as a 9 over Arkansas an 8, and I've got Arizona State over TCU. In the Midwest, your first-round upsets are?
Penn State, only one.
I've got Penn State, and I've got Drake. Drake seems to be a very popular 12 over 5 pick. The point spread, by the way, is like down to 1. So those are my two there. All right, let's move back to the East. We're into the second round. Who do you have advancing to the Sweet 16 out of the East?
In the Sweet 16 in the East, I have Purdue, Duke, Kentucky, and Michigan State.
I have Alabama. Wait, I said in the East, right?
Yeah, you said the
I've
East.
I've got Purdue, Duke, K-State, and Marquette into the Sweet 16. Purdue a 1, Duke a 5, and then the 2 and the 3, Marquette and Kansas State. You really like Izzo's team. And by the way, you'll probably be right because he always does it this time of year. In the South, who do you have in the Sweet 16?
In the South, I have Alabama, San Diego State, Creighton, and Arizona.
Wow. I've got Alabama, Virginia. I've got Baylor and Missouri upsetting Arizona in a second round into the Sweet 16. In the Midwest, your Sweet 16 teams are?
This one's relatively chalky. Got Houston, Indiana, Texas, and Iowa State.
I've got Iowa after they upset Houston. I'm high on Iowa in this tournament. Third most efficient offensive team in America per KenPom. I've got Indiana, and then I've got Xavier in Texas, chalk in the other Sweet 16 game. And then out west, your Sweet 16?
Kansas, UConn, TCU, UCLA.
Kansas, UConn, UCLA, Gonzaga, pure chalk for me. So we have it down to the Sweet 16. We'll give you our Elite Eight picks, Final Four picks, and our eventual national championship next hour. I've got some smell test picks for today's games as well. There are a couple that really stick out.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.